Okay, so we're here with Roger Kidd, director of...
Kevin Kidd.
It's, well, director of Roger Dodd.
Like Roger.
Well, so who's Roger?
Roger is sort of a composite character of many people that I know and have known in New York. I was really interested in doing a film that captured a certain type of personality that is very New York, but probably in any urban center, which is somebody who is very educated and very smart and can kind of talk about many different subjects, but is completely ignorant about his own emotional life. So I feel like Roger is a professional, and he dresses very well, and he has a real job, and I'm sure he's very excellent at his job, but he's basically a child emotionally. He has no self-awareness whatsoever.
What about the characters that go around Roger? Are they also they very characteristic of New York?
I guess so. I mean, I feel like I've lived in New York for 15 years, and I feel like I like people that have a sort of energy and talk very quickly and, you know, are sort of passionate about things. So, you know, I think we were lucky to get a cast of people that just brought this amazing kind of rapid-fire energy to it, and it allowed the film to move. I mean, this could be a very talky film. I mean, it is a very talky film. So we really needed to keep it moving and hopefully have it just wash over the audience so they didn't just, like, get fed up and, you know.
And because I recognize that not only Dylan is, like, a cruel person, but also the people that are around him. I'm thinking about the character of Isabella Rossellini that is very cruel with him. So is this what New York is, actually, like, in the business? Everyone's so selfish and cruel.
I think probably... You know, this movie has to do with maybe what happens when you start to blur the lines between business and relationships. I think probably Joyce, Isabella's character, is somebody who handles relationships as she handles her work. And I think once you start to mix those two up, then you get in trouble. So I don't want to say that everybody in New York is like this, but definitely in a place which is very career-driven, it makes having a real connection with somebody difficult because you always have other agendas going on.
What about the way you technically set up your movie? You didn't show much about New York, but you focalized on the characters. And also the way you like edited. Mm-hmm. It wasn't like you showed also hands like that covered the faces. It was like a strange way of showing.
Yeah, we made a decision to go away from sort of more standard film narrative where you have a master shot that establishes a scene. My cinematographer and I work very closely together, and we really just thought we have to pull people into the movie and just keep them there. And so everything we did was, the goal of everything we did was just to keep people in the movie and not remind them that they were watching a movie. And so the sort of jitteriness of the camera work is an extension of Roger and the fact that he sort of doesn't want to be pinned down. But I think there's also something about it that tells people, okay, I'm not going to sit back and look at a beautiful frame. I need to follow the faces through the movie. And I just know in my own personal taste, when I go to a movie, I would rather have to work a little bit. You know, I don't want it to be too easy. I want people to really have to pay attention and make sure that they're hearing every line and really follow the characters. So the movie is set in New York, but we decided to not focus so much on seeing the Empire State Building, let's say, and just really make this about the people. Have the landscape of the film be the faces.
And this movie is the power of this movie is basically the script. It's so good and so funny. What about the international distribution and the dubbing? How do you think the movie will change in other languages?
Yeah, it's funny. I wish I could say that I had thought of that before, but now that we're here, we showed a subtitled print. We were very worried that the subtitles would be too hard. It would be too quick to follow. The response has been pretty good. Dubbing, you know, who knows? For me, it's painful to think of the film being dubbed. Not that. You know, a dubbing house wouldn't do a good job, but I feel like so much of the performance of Roger is the way in which he kind of tastes the words. So, you know, the good thing is that we seem to be having a good response here. We were a little bit worried that maybe, I don't know, somehow this wouldn't translate, you know, or the sense of humor wouldn't, you know, for me, when I was in school, Italy sort of was cinema. You know, the first movies I watched were Fellini and Antonioni and Visconti, so I'm so relieved that the Italians seem to... I mean, you know, you never make a movie that everyone's going to like, but I'm happy that it seems to be people are basically getting the idea of the film.
So is this your first time in Venice? What do you think about it?
Oh, God, it's incredible. I'm ready to get off the Lido. I'm ready to actually see the city of Venice. You know, making this movie has been, you know, a dream come true. So to come to Venice, it's like it just caps off everything. I mean, it's just been incredible. And I think I'm having the typical American reaction of, you know that the streets are going to be filled with water. You know that in your head, but until you see it, you're like, it's just incredible, you know? So I'm having that thing of like, people drive around in boats instead of cars. It's great, you know? So hopefully tomorrow we will have a day to walk around and see some of the city proper. But yeah, we're having a wonderful time.
And I also think you should be particularly proud to be in a section that is quite respectful. I mean, SIC is like the section where critics actually judge your film. So it's supposed to be, you know, very...
It's great. You know, we've been so crazy just kind of finishing the film and getting the film sold domestically that, you know, when we got into Venice, I honestly didn't understand about the different sections. So, of course, when I got here, I was telling my producer, I'm really worried. I hope that the critics like the film. And she would say, do you know who chose your film? It's like the critics chose your film. I'm like, oh, okay. Well, then I hope the public likes it, you know. Yeah, and it's been great. Film criticism, I think, in the States is not... It's not as strong as it is here, and I feel like the critical voice here has more weight. And so to be chosen for that section and to have people also going to the screening and seeming to respond, I think is fantastic. It means a lot.
And how do you work with your actors? Do you follow the script? Do you let them improvise?
Yeah, we follow the script pretty closely. We did a lot of cutting of dialogue. I think you have to really listen to an actor when they say, I feel like I'm talking too much. When an actor says, I have too many lines, it's time to cut. So our rehearsal period was generally spent trying to figure out at what point the scene was starting to repeat itself and then make sure we cut it there and not a word later. I tend to be somebody who, I mean, I've only made one film, so who knows. On this film, it was apparent that I had a very experienced cast, and I tried to explain the scene as clearly. I like to try to keep things simple. If I let myself, I will talk too much, and I think you can't give actors too much information. So generally, I try to let them feel safe, like it's not a big deal. If they try something that doesn't work, we just do another. You try to set up a situation where they can sort of have fun and play, and trust their instincts. You know, I feel like actors, you know, they already have everything they need, and you just need to like make them feel good enough to access it, you know.
And when did you start shooting the movie? Before or after the 11th of September?
It was right after, which was very intense. I think we were the only film shooting in New York at that point. There might have been a few. No, I think we were the only one, maybe the only independent film. I think maybe there was a big studio feature. And it was very intense. In New York, it was very special feeling in New York for a couple of months after that. As horrible as it was, it definitely brought out a real humanity in people. And we were, in a strange way, we were very lucky to be shooting at that time because everybody was just so happy to get back to work and making a film. When it goes well, when it goes badly, making a movie is probably the most horrific activity you could possibly do. When it goes well, there's nothing more sort of collaborative and humane. And for me, after what had happened, it was just a very warm place to be for a month in this family. I've been in a lot of sets as a technician loading cameras, and I've never had a vibe like this. The atmosphere on set was incredible.
Did you change anything on the script or in turning after this? Did you like wanted maybe to shoot the Twin Towers or something, and then you just were forced to cut it out?
I suppose we were lucky in that we really didn't have any locations that were specific to downtown. We did the changes we made involved jokes that may have certain jokes which might have been acceptable before September 11th. I can't remember exactly, but maybe references to, I don't even know. I just remember a couple of times in the editing room feeling like, this is just not good. We should cut this line because it somehow refers to, you know, what had happened.
Do you think characters like Roger and his being so cynic after what happened at the 11th of September may change. I mean, like, also the people that work in New York, maybe now that they know that there's this big problem there, they can change, like, and become more good people.
Yeah, I hope so. I really have a very optimistic view of people. I think they're basically good. I feel like we tend to create cultures for ourselves and make it very difficult to actually directly communicate. And what was really special in that fall was that suddenly all the imagery and the advertising and the media kind of dropped away. I mean, it was still there, but people were really connecting directly. And I hope there is some lingering after effects from that. You know, and I feel like, you know, Roger is a cynical character, but when you're directing a film, you have to just love all of your characters and try to feel like there's a humanity there. And I think what's great about what Campbell does is it would be very easy to just tune this guy out after 10 minutes, but there's something about Campbell Scott that you just keep wanting, you think that maybe there's something in there that could, you know, he could learn something and there's some redeeming quality. So we were just... You know, without Campbell, the movie dies, I think. Yeah.
And where did you pick up the story? Is this in any way autobiographical?
No.
I had a friend in college, a Spanish guy named Mark, who lives in Madrid now, a good friend. And he used to have this uncanny ability to go into bars, and after a couple of drinks, he would be able to, like, figure out people's, like, one weakness, and he would just kind of, like, you know, try to crush their self-esteem. And he's much nicer now. He's turned into a very nice man. But I think I feel like a lot of sort of modern urban culture is based on just insecurity and making people feel not strong in themselves. And I like the idea of a guy whose idea of seduction is actually to try to break somebody. And, you know, for me, I always thought of this character as somebody who, you know, he's talking here, but the real story is going on underneath. So hopefully the movie is something that washes over you, and eventually the dialogue, you start to realize that people can say things, but something completely different could be going on underneath.
So if you could choose, who would you be of your characters?
I would probably be Jennifer Beals. Because she has the soul of the movie. You know, I think what I like about the two characters is that they both suffer from, I think, something that is very modern, which is one character thinks he knows more than he really does. One character has too much information and actually knows nothing about himself. And one character feels very naive and wants help, but already has everything he needs inside. So I love both Roger and Nick.
And in the end, the public is quite sure Roger is going to change. But then it kind of starts again. He goes, so...
Yeah. I wanted to be careful. You have to... When you make a movie that is a certain type of movie, you really can't tie things up neatly in the end. I enjoy happy endings. I don't like movies that just think humanity is bad. I don't want to pay money to see that. So I did feel like there needed to be some sense at the end that these characters could learn from this and improve, but I also feel like it's unrealistic to have somebody change overnight. So I like the way Campbell plays that scene, and that he's still holding court. It's basically like the first scene, except he's had to go back to high school and basically start over. And he's still giving advice to the boys and still basically telling them that you have to pretend, but it's like at least his advice is starting to go in the right direction. So I always thought of Roger as not necessarily a bad person, but as a good person who's in a bad place and just needs to work through.
Yeah. And as your first project, what were the big problems you had, like money and this huge cast you have? I mean, for your first movie, you can think of yourself as very fortunate, I think.
I mean, I basically got plucked out of the haystack of independent filmmakers in New York, and I'm living, you know, every dream of people that go through film school. We, you know, the story I've told a thousand times is Anne and I were basically running in circles. Anne is my producer, trying to raise money for the film. I had no track record as a director at that time, so it was very difficult to get scripts to actors. The agents won't pass it along. And so in desperation, I started carrying a script with me because I live in New York, and I figured I see actors in the street all the time. Maybe I can just try to you know, and I ran into a couple of people, but they said, look, I get in trouble if I take the script without consulting with my agent. And this was in July. Ann and I were really getting frustrated. We had planned to be shooting the movie in the fall, and it really told everybody we'd be shooting in October. And here it was July, and we were really no further along. And I was sitting in a cafe, and Campbell Scott walked in. And I honestly had never thought of Campbell for the role, but the more I thought about it, the more I thought it would be perfect. And I went out on the sidewalk and called Ann, and I said, I'm sitting next to Campbell Scott. What should I do? She's like, do you have a script? I'm like, of course I have a script. I always have a script. She's like, give it to him. And so I went up expecting him just to say, send it to my agent. But Campbell runs his career in a very different way than a lot of American actors. And he accepted the script. I never thought I'd hear from him again, but he called 2 weeks later. And I basically had a meeting where I told him, I need you to help me get other people involved. I have, you know, I'm going to direct this film and I believe in my ability, but nobody knows me and you have a track record. And so in 1 week, we basically went from not being able to get anybody to call us back to me sitting with Campbell, and he would say, okay, who would you like for Sophie? And I would say, well, I know this is unrealistic, but my absolute dream would be Jennifer Beals. And he's like, oh, Jenny, I'll call her, no problem. How about Joyce? Isabella Rossellini? Yeah, okay, I'll call her, no problem. I mean, it was crazy. Isabella agreed to do the film without even reading the script. Wow. Yeah, Campbell called her and said, there's a part you should do, we need you for 4 days, and she said yes. So I was just, you know, what's going to happen when she sees the script and sees that it's just all about all this horrible stuff, you know?
Very nerve-wracking. He was basically your hook.
Yeah, he was. He absolutely, I mean, a lot of times you see an executive producer credit on a film, and it's sort of like, yeah, whatever, it's some kind of sham credit. Campbell earned his executive producer credit. I mean, Ann and I were basically doing what all independent filmmakers do, taking these little baby steps. And then we met Campbell in July, and we were shooting 3 months later. I mean, it's incredible. And here, I mean, I only met Campbell 15 months ago, and I'm in Venice. I mean, are you kidding me? It's like a dream, you know, it's like a Cinderella story.
And what about your inspirations? Who did you... Filmmakers.
I feel like I'm part of a sort of tradition that is going on right now, which is very naturalistic. Wong Kar-wai was a huge inspiration to me. There was a certain point where I really felt movies were just static and were becoming too much about just the photography, and they weren't. And when I saw some of the stuff that Wong Kar-wai was doing, it's just really inspirational because he was doing things that really felt like they were done. You know, I'm not interested in doing things on video. I'm trained on film and I enjoy the way film looks. But something that I do enjoy about video is his ability to work very quickly and spontaneously. And, you know, all the stuff that Wong Kar-wai is doing, Eric Zonka is a huge influence. I'm not necessarily interested in dogma as setting a rule for yourself. I think it's silly to kind of limit yourself, but I appreciate what the dogma filmmakers are trying to fight against. I mean, they really are trying to return it to something that is less about the machinery of filmmaking and more about the people. So I enjoy filmmakers that are sort of invisible, that aren't, it's not about a beautiful dolly shot, it's really just about telling the story, simply.
Right. Now, last question. What's going to be your next project?
I'm writing something right now that Ann and I will be doing next spring, which is also a New York story. Not sure how funny it's going to be, we'll see, I'm still writing it, but it takes place in New York, the world of New York real estate, and it basically is a quest film of this man searching for this woman, going through all the different areas of New York City. So this one will take more advantage of New York as a location.
Just one more thing. What do you think about Woody Allen? You know, he's probably the director that most shot in New York,
yeah.
And you're basically doing not the same thing, but,
yeah.
You know, you love New York maybe for the same reason. What do you think about him?
I love Woody Allen. I think he... You know, obviously, there's some magic thing that was happening in the 70s that everybody was making better movies than they are now. So but what I really admire about Woody Allen is the fact that he just works continuously. You know, he makes a movie every year. My absolute dream would be to get up to a momentum where every year I have a small project that I do. Once you've lived in New York, you just, as a location, it's so inspiring. It's very difficult to consider shooting anywhere else. There's an energy there, you know, beyond just having all the production support and all the rental houses and all the labs. It's just, you know, for me, New York is sort of how I now see the world. Like, the world, to me, looks like New York. It's fast and very dynamic and dense. So, hey, if I could have people compare me to Woody Allen, That would be just fine. That would be just fine.
Okay, then good luck.
Thank you. Thanks very much. I hope I didn't talk too much.
No, it's okay. Do you want... I'll give you